certainly this new exhibition that looks at the history of gay and lesbian images on television is perfect for us because we've been collecting since 1976.
You know, Jody, when we were younger, there was no such thing as homosexuals.
Yes, they were, Aunt Jessica. The homosexuals go way back in history.
Do these tears fall like dust?
I like to take your hand and lay it down.
I want to see how lucky you can be.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Multnomah marriages are ruled legal pending further Oregon developments, take a fun-filled tour through some queer TV history, and iconic veteran and virgin CDs blossom in the audiophile. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 24th, 2004. The U.S. state of Oregon must recognize Multnomah County's marriages of same-gender couples, a judge ruled this week. That makes 3,022 gay and lesbian couples the first in the U.S. to have their marriages affirmed by a court. It's a remarkable victory for them, but one that's incomplete and apt to be short-lived. The state's expected to seek a suspension of Multnomah County Circuit Court Judge Frank Bearden's order that Oregon register the marriages. Bearden's own decision recognized that the final judgment will come from the Oregon State Supreme Court or else from voters should they choose to amend the state constitution. The ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, brought the case known as Lee versus Oregon on behalf of several married and wish-to-be-married lesbian and gay couples. Judge Bearden agreed with their claim that denying the benefits of marriage to same-gender couples violates Oregon's constitutional guarantees of equal protection under the law. That was also the view of Multnomah County's legal counsel, which led the county board to approve the licensing that began in March. It's also shared by Oregon's attorney general and the legal advisor to the state legislature.
Judge Bearden also ordered Multnomah County to stop issuing marriage licenses to same-gender couples for now. That's in order to give state lawmakers a chance to remedy the discrimination. But should they fail to act within 90 days of their next session, the county should resume licensing, he said. Just when that would be isn't clear. The Oregon legislature had been considering holding a special session in June to discuss tax reform. That may not happen because many lawmakers aren't ready to become embroiled in discussing marriage. The regular session will open a few months later. However, the state is expected to ask for a deferral of Bearden's deadline. Judge Bearden's ruling suggests that equality under the Oregon Constitution could be achieved by civil unions as well as by marriage. The case is expected to be appealed, possibly directly to the Oregon Supreme Court rather than to the Intermediate State Court of Appeals.
Just as historic and yet just as limited was a California legislative panel's vote this week to open legal marriage to same-gender couples. It's believed to be the first vote ever in a U.S. state legislature to support equal marriage rights, yet the bill may not advance much farther. The State Assembly Judiciary Committee voted 8-3, all Democrats in favor, all Republicans against, to change California's definition of marriage from one man and one woman to two persons. That bill, AB 1967, was introduced by openly gay Democratic Assembly member from San Francisco, Mark Leno. Just 4 years ago, a substantial majority of voters approved a statewide ballot measure enshrining the one-man, one-woman definition, but only for California's recognition of marriages performed in another state, according to Leno, not for those performed within its own borders. His bill's opponents believe the ballot initiative expressed the will of the people to restrict marriage exclusively to heterosexual couples. The bill moves next to another California Assembly Committee, Appropriations, where it may not even get a hearing. Should it succeed there, it would face an uphill battle on the Assembly floor. Similar bills have also been introduced this year in New York, Rhode Island, and Vermont. So far, none has received committee approval, and enactment is not expected. Meanwhile, the California Supreme Court is reviewing the legality of San Francisco's recent licensed marriages for gay and lesbian couples.
Massachusetts' top state court has already decreed that gays and lesbians will be legally marrying beginning in mid-May, and this week the state Senate rejected the governor's last desperate bid to stop them. Republican Governor Mitt Romney wanted to ask the court to stay its ruling, which now puts same-gender marriages in place for at least 2.5 years. Democratic State Attorney General Thomas Riley refused to pursue that action, which many believe would have no legal basis. So Romney tried a little-used provision by which the legislature could allow him to appoint a special counsel to do it. But the Senate this week refused to even consider the governor's emergency bill, with Senate President Robert Travaglini citing more pressing matters. House Speaker Thomas Finneran has promised that it will at least get a hearing there, but there's no sign the Senate position will change. Romney publicly doubted the legislature's sincerity in having given a first round of approval to a constitutional amendment to prohibit same-gender marriage, which would override the court's decision. The same proposed amendment would also create civil unions for gays and lesbians. To be enacted, it must again be approved by the next legislature and then by the voters.
This week, the Catholic Action League filed its own petition demanding that the Massachusetts High Court delay the marriages until the public can vote on that amendment. The state attorney general filed a brief in opposition, declaring the group had no legal standing in the matter. Another group is hoping to use an obscure item in the Massachusetts Declaration of Rights to unseat the four justices who form the majority in the Supreme Judicial Court's split decision. To succeed, they need to convince a majority of the legislature as well as the governor and his counsel. This process is known as the Bill of Address and is distinct from impeachment. It was last used to remove a high court justice 200 years ago. One of the many details the state is trying to cope with in anticipation of same-gender marriages is whether to grant them to couples from outside the state. This week, a bill was introduced to repeal a 1913 Massachusetts law that Romney and others believe prohibits the state from marrying non-resident gay and lesbian couples whose home states would not recognize their marriages.
Oklahoma voters will get to decide this year whether to amend their state constitution against same-gender marriages. This week, the state House followed the Senate in overwhelmingly approving the proposal to restrict marriage within the state exclusively to heterosexual couples, to deny legal recognition to any same-gender marriages another state might perform, and to create a misdemeanor offense for knowingly issuing a marriage license to a gay or lesbian couple.
The Kentucky state legislature gave its final approval last week to putting before the voters a constitutional amendment against same-gender marriages, as the Mississippi state legislature did the week before. Georgia and Utah lawmakers had already approved amendments for their state ballots. Several other state legislatures are still working on similar measures, while in still more states, petitions are circulating towards advancing anti-marriage amendments.
Virginia state lawmakers emphatically insisted on a measure to deny recognition not only to marriages, but to any kind of civil union or partnership agreement same-gender partners might bring in from other states. The measure was so broad that Governor Mark Warner feared it might interfere with business contracts and generate constitutional challenges, so he sent it back to the legislature with suggested amendments. This week, both houses gave the original wording veto-proof to two-thirds majorities.
European developments stand in stark contrast. In France, Green Party Member of Parliament and Mayor of Bordeaux, Noël Maumère, announced he'll perform a civil marriage for a gay male couple in June. He was inspired by the recent actions of two U.S. mayors and said that legal research had failed to find any explicit prohibition against marrying same-gender couples. Since 1999, French gays and lesbians have had the option of legally registering their relationships with pacts of civil solidarity, which carry many of the legal benefits of marriage. Maumère believes that if the marriage is declared void in France, it will serve as a test case in the European Court of Human Rights.
A bill to create registered partnerships was introduced in the Czech Parliament this week by 9 members from 4 parties. That group included both the oldest and youngest members of the chamber. They hope their bill, developed in conjunction with gay and lesbian groups, will fare better than its predecessors, even though the ruling coalition's cabinet could not agree on a proposal the government had drafted. The bill would provide for registration, dissolution, including support payments, medical decision-making, and inheritance rights, but not for adoption.
New Zealand's family court this week established that a boy has 3 legal parents, the lesbian couple who bore and raised him, and his partnered gay Australian sperm donor. It started as a friendly arrangement between the two couples for artificial insemination and limited visitation for the men. But the relationship deteriorated into a grueling 2-year legal battle over access and decision-making when the mothers moved back to New Zealand after the insemination. Following 2 high court decisions in the case, the family court has declared that the mothers share custody and the father also has standing as a legal guardian. The court also significantly expanded the father's visitation rights beyond what the parents had originally contracted. It's considered a landmark case, although a bill to overhaul New Zealand's family laws is now in the parliament.
And finally, the day may not be far off when a lesbian couple can conceive a child together without sperm, and not just a clone of one, but offspring with genetic material from both mothers. Japan's Tokyo University of Agriculture has produced 2 healthy adult mice with a mixture of genes from 2 females. As reported in the current edition of the distinguished journal Nature, that's the first time this has been achieved in mammals. One offspring mouse, named Kaguya, has gone on to mate with a male the old-fashioned way and produced an apparently healthy litter of her own.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 24th, 2004. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Billy's Bones feel free and get lucky with new notes from the queer music scene later in the program.
Boy, the way Glenn Miller played
songs that made the hit parade.
Guys like us, we had it made.
Those were the days.
Buried in your favorite classic TV reruns, there's a unique history of contemporary gay and lesbian images. That history is currently the subject of a series of screenings presented by the Museum of Television and Radio. Running through the end of June in Los Angeles and New York City, it features programs dating back to the 1960s. MTNR television curator Ronald Simon guides This Way Out's Steve Pride through some groundbreaking queer scenes on the small screen. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Once upon a time, before Queer as Folk, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and Will and Grace, finding a gay character on U.S. television wasn't as easy as just picking up the remote. When I was a kid, such images were few and far between. But when the Museum of Television and Radio took a look at the history of gays and lesbians on the small screen, they found we've been knocking on that closet door for a surprising 40 years.
My name is Ron Simon. I'm curator of television at the Museum of Television and Radio. Also teach television at NYU and Columbia. Been curator at the museum for about 20 years now. I had joined the museum just when it was beginning to grow, and it's sort of grown now, both to Los Angeles and internationally. We have a collection of over 125,000 programs. What we want to do is look into the collection and look at themes, look at genres, look at ideas and see how things have developed. And certainly this new exhibition that looks at the history of gay and lesbian images on television is perfect for us because we've been collecting now since 1976. And this allows us to reflect back and look at how gay themes have been furthered on television from the very beginning through the present. The issue really began sort of in the mid-60s when television did it seriously. During the Live Days, there were a lot of dramatic programs, but not much done on homosexuality. It was something that was not of interest to a Patachayevsky or to a Rod Serling. So that it's with the move to California and the move to our series that television begins to think about homosexuality. And it's interesting, it first begins in dramatic programming, that primetime shows try to think about what is a homosexual and not quite sure how to do it. I mean, obviously it's coded as something that is malignant or something that can be cured, so that it's not something that's trying to be understood, but it's more seen in the good versus evil context that framed most of the discussion in dramatic programming in the 60s.
But it wasn't until the early 1970s that gay characters became more than victims. In a 1971 episode of The Mary Tyler Moore Show, they were family. Phyllis's brother seems to be a match for Rhoda, but there's a slight problem.
Phyllis, Ben and I aren't getting married. He's not my type.
What do you mean, he's not your type?
He is witty. He is attractive. He's successful. He's single. He's gay.
It's really with the emergence of the adult sitcom, in the early 70s, that gay and lesbian ideas are broached among the comic characters. And certainly Archie Bunker was a great character because you could argue both sides and you could present Archie's side and his family's side. And I think Norman Lear used ideas about the otherness of a gay character to really confront Archie and the people that agreed with Archie and think about homosexuality and begin to think about it seriously.
Well, Steve, you're going to want to bust him wide open when I tell you this. I don't know where he gets these brainstorms, but he thinks that you're the... I can't even say it to you, Steve.
He's right, Arch.
Huh?
It's interesting that in the dramatic shows, there's always a melodramatic component to it, that when you see Robert Young as Marcus Welby, he counsels characters, but it's very traditional, not quite sure what he's dealing with. For him, it's a disease. Drama did not really have the formula yet to deal with this issue, but in comedy, led by Norman Lear, who tried to embrace all sorts of controversial issues, comedy was much more successful in grappling in the beginning with homosexuality than was dramatic programming. In the early 80s, St. Elsewhere had a character that was dealing with the AIDS crisis, so that it would only be on for an episode or two, so you didn't have a continuing character. So really in the late 80s or so, then you have continuing characters that present issues about being gay. The situation comedies had characters that ran over time. Certainly Billy Crystal's been saluted for his character on Soap, one of the first continuing characters.
Well, Jody, so you're going to get married, huh?
Yeah, it looks that way.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
I guess that means you're not gay.
No, Aunt Jessica, it doesn't.
Hmm. You know, Jody, when we were younger, there was no such thing as homosexuals.
Yes, there were, Aunt Jessica. The homosexuals go way back in history.
Who?
Alexander the Great was gay. Plato was gay.
Plato? Mickey Mouse's dog was gay?
But there were a lot of other characters that were showing in our schedule that either were seen very briefly, like Hot L. Baltimore, which is an adaptation of a Lanford Wilson play, or a very odd program called Snips that dealt with the hairdressing industry, never seen. And we received that program from David Brenner, who was in it. So it's a way that people can see these programs that probably were debated in executive suites, but were never given over to the American public.
Another milestone in the history of gay TV characters came in the mid-80s with a cable show called Brothers that introduced two gay characters, one a straight-acting jock and the other a little bit more flamboyant.
I am a homosexual! I am a man! I know who I am!
Because it takes a real man to wear this outfit.
The sitcom Roseanne introduced us to a rainbow coalition that included Sandra Bernhardt as Nancy, Estelle Parsons as Roseanne's mom, who did a gay reveal late in the series, and of course, Martin Mull as Leon.
What if I am not even really gay?
But do you like having sex with men?
Well, it's
gay!
Even with all that visibility, it wasn't until 1996 and Spin City that TV had a regular character that was both gay and a person of color.
You were playing basketball?
No, I was bowling. I look like an idiot.
What I meant was...
What you meant was you're surprised I play basketball because I'm a gay man. But you see, Stuart, I'm also a black man. So it's really just a battle between your archaic stereotypes.
The screening series at the Museum of Television and Radio includes shows like 30-something, Northern Exposure, Seinfeld, Quantum Leap, Melrose Place, and such milestone moments as the coming out episode of Ellen in 1997. But if you can't make it to New York or California to visit the museum and want to see a gay character on television, these days, all you have to do is turn it on.
So much of television now is dealing maturely and adultly with the gay issue, and this is just the beginning for us to take a look at. It's an issue now that's out front, people can deal with it, and there's nothing wrong with it now. In fact, you want to be put it in your narrative, and you want to deal as creatively as possible with it. And so you can see this evolution over 40 years on television, but it's now an issue that permeates television, and that's a good thing, because television should further discussion.
This has been a conversation with the television curator for the Museum of Television and Radio, Ronald Simon. For more information about this story, point your internet browser to www.mtr.org or prideonscreen.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
This is Janice Ian, and you are listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
A tribute to Billie Holiday, an edgy newcomer and a favorite performer in a new phase, are this month's melange from The Audiophile.
The latest album by Janice Ian is called Billie's Bones. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. The album again finds Janice at the top of her craft, with her thoughtful and inspiring lyrics gracing her superb musicianship.
Billie's tears fall like dust from the air into my eyes, seeping in before they rust, spilling secrets words can't hide. I am standing on the bones of a man to hide a climb.
You know, artists, when we're doing our job, we get to take people's dreams and make something visible out of them. And then when people forget that they have dreams and everything looks really dark and horrible, we get to remind you that they exist. And that's a serious privilege for us, you know. I feel like I stand on a lot of people's bones every time I get up on stage. The bones of people like Billie Holiday who do that for me and continue to do it for me. And I don't know, it is a terrible cliche, but it really is a real privilege to be able to do it night after night.
You better save somebody.
Find out more about Billie's Bones, which is the 18th studio album by Janice Ian, at www.janiceian.com.
Feel Free is the name of the debut album by Virginia-based artist Julie Clark.
You can tell she's over you. She thinks you've changed your doesn't say it anymore. Sometimes you wonder what song she's listening to. Does it remind her of you?
The album is a nice blend of ballads and up-tempo acoustic rock pop, and Clark's audiences know she can take them to the edge.
My live audiences are the ones that have shown me which songs are the most commercial. Their responses really, really tell the tale. The first one is Whatever It Takes. And I guess just the universal love song is always going to have a lot of commercial potential. And the other one is the Naked song. My audiences don't just ask for that song. They don't just request it. They start chanting, naked, 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 until I play it.
I like to take your hand and lay it down. Silver moonlight, show you my favorite constellations of bodies in the night. Call me up, and little do you know I'm already talking to you. Although I don't breathe a word about my secret, I think you feel it too. I want you.
You can learn more about the album Feel Free by Julie Clark at www.julieclark.net.
The recent changes in the life of Melissa Etheridge are amply shown on her new CD called Lucky.
The songs that I had written had been from a certain painful experience, a longing. It was part of my life that was unfinished. I am different now. I'm in love. The biggest emotional inspiration certainly has been my new relationship, from the discovery to falling in love, then the fun and the passion and the sex.
Well, I have lived 10 years plus 10 and 10 and 10 again. I have seen too much to pretend. Then you wanted to come in. I have survived all of the lies that made me wise, the locks and walls and the peace advice. Still, when I look into your eyes, it's a surprise when you say,
Lucky is her eighth album and her first since her new relationship, and both seem ready to rock.
I wanna see how lucky can be. I wanna ride with my angel and live shockingly. I wanna drive to the edge and into the sea. I wanna see how lucky can be. I don't wanna ride on the shotgun side. Don't wanna be a quaint observer on the supersonic ride.
Find out more about Melissa Etheridge and her album Lucky at www.melissaetheridge.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Fensbury, Rex Walkner, Steve Pride, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on planetout.com. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from Clarissa Pincola Estes, La Sociedad de Guadalupe Foundation, and the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. You too can help keep this program on the air and get some queer audio history, music, and culture CDs in return. For all the details, log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KUBO El Centro, California, 5KIX Kangaroo Island, South Australia, WWUH West Hartford, Connecticut, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we should all stay tuned.